سیک ما تفایل آیا و ما مسیرک چی پدرین حالتین فلمکین نشد آل مومن فلمکین ما داونه نیست آل جن یا بیکین فر پرو هینا کل هر تمل ایه دیا بش فل آسر نایدو
فل
Nel alko mana matini episode yuta fil osor with your host Sandra Farujam.
With Jake Smith.
Lum anna shat speciani mana. Someone, can you introduce yourself?
So hello, my name is Katrina Kassar. I am 20 years old and I'm about to go into my third year at the University of Malta. I'm studying for a degree in international relations. And thank you. And I have a blog that is kind of what I am known for doing online, katrinakassar.com. It's kind of a place where I can share my own opinions, share my own experiences, somewhere where I can be annoying, kind of on my own website, you know, my words, my rules, and nobody can kind of get mad about it because if you don't want to see it, don't go on my website. That kind of thing.
Mela, so I want to begin this question. How would you define a journalist? Like in a small sentence, how would you define a journalist?
So to me, a journalist is someone who, to the best of his ability, tries to report the facts of a situation that he believes to be of importance for the readers to know. So something that I, as a citizen,
public
should
interest.
Know. Public interest, exactly. That's the word that I was looking for.
So, again, so what makes a journalist a journalist? Like, what are the core traits that you need to have in order for you to become a journalist?
I think honesty and integrity. I think you have the responsibility to make sure that you are delivering the truth and not some kind of twisted version of events or some sort of propaganda, because, you know, that, in my opinion, makes the distinguishment between a journalist and a propagandist.
So again, do you think there is a certain distinction between an online journalist and a journalist?
Well, the thing is, nowadays, I think most journalists are quote-unquote online journalists.
Yes.
Because nowadays it's no longer kind of you're only going to see a journalist's work on the paper. A journalist's work is going to go, okay, maybe it will go on the paper, but it will also go on timesofmalta.com, and it will be on maltatoday.com, Love and Malta. And so every journalist is technically an online journalist. For me, I would not make a distinction between the two. What I would make a distinction between is a distinction between a journalist and a blogger. So for me, I would not consider myself a journalist.
So you would not consider yourself a journalist?
No, I would not. Because I admit this, what I write is my opinion. What I write is my point of view. I do make it a point to try and deliver the truth and to deliver the facts. But I will not go and say that what I say is objective.
You wouldn't say you're impartial.
I wouldn't say I'm completely impartial. I have a political ideology. So when you go on katrinakassar.com, you are going to see views that adhere to my political ideology. It's not going to be impartial. It's not going to be weighing both sides to the argument. It is going. I'm going to be explaining to you why I believe this.
Okay.
Interesting. So
that's the difference between a journalist and a propagandist. The distinction is clear. That this is my opinion, this is what I believe, and these are the facts. So the facts make me believe this, for example, or because of my beliefs, I believe that.
Yes, but I would also make a distinction between a blogger and a propagandist.
Yes, of course.
Because I feel like a blogger would make it very clear that this is their own views, and this is what I try to do. Whereas a propagandist would try to portray their own views as facts.
Yes.
Which unfortunately, I feel like a lot of quote unquote journalists do in more.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, interesting. But wouldn't, like, to me, who isn't that much into the journalistic world, for example, this is just me, my humble opinion. Do you think that it essentially is the same thing, though?
The same thing to be a blogger versus a propagandist?
Yeah, essentially. Well, if you don't make the distinction that you are impartial, if that side detail is thrown away from the actual equation of it, would it still be a blogger, or would you just be a propagandist at that point?
Well, I think something else that also makes a propagandist is that you are purposefully trying to manipulate public opinion to actually achieve a result. So, for example,
there's an agenda.
Yes, exactly, there's an agenda. I don't feel like I have an agenda. I'm not trying to manipulate people into, for example, voting for one party over the other. you know.
So you're just saying your point of view.
My point of view, so...
Convince people to agree
exactly
with you.
Yeah.
That's, again, and this is just a bit of just a question that me and Jake have been talking about. Do you think having a sort of platform that you can put your opinions on somehow elevate the level of your opinion? As in that this opinion is... holds more value than X, for example?
Well, I mean, something that is definitely not the case is that just because someone has a website doesn't necessarily make them more insightful or more kind of their opinion more worthy than someone who does not have a website. So, for example, I, you know, over my my years as kind of either a writer, activist, etc., I've met many people, and I've met people who are, oh, I feel, are so much more insightful, so much smarter than me, so much more intelligent, and yet they tend to keep quiet mm-hmm. about their views. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't make social media posts to the extent I do. They don't make it very clear what their views are, yet when you actually sit down and have a conversation with them, they are the most insightful people you've ever met. So it doesn't necessarily make the case that someone with a website, someone who is outspoken, necessarily that their opinion is more important or more prominent, you know?
But it will be, I mean, inevitably. Because if you, as you said, some people can have an opinion but keep quiet, keep it to mm-hmm. them, between their friends, whatever. And then you can have someone who has a website.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the one who has a website will obviously, inevitably be viewed more.
Yes.
Publicly,
they will definitely be perceived more.
Mm-hmm.
They might be either respected more or ridiculed more, yes, depending on,
sure,
obviously the audience and what the blogger has to say. So they will definitely become more of a prominent figure than someone who doesn't have a website.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that their opinions are more worthy of being heard.
So what would you say to these people who don't have an online presence, who are really insightful and as smart and intelligent as you say they were? Would you recommend them for them to have an online presence? Would you recommend them to not have an online presence?
Well, it's a bit difficult because... it's a bit difficult to make the argument that everyone with opinions should have an online presence, because isn't that a little bit unrealistic?
No, but in the sense, would you recommend them to have an online presence? Not to say everyone should have an online mm-hmm. presence, because I agree with you mm-hmm. in the sense. But
you can go on Il Kotra for that.
Fair enough. but again...
I get your question. It makes sense. And the Dakle Konyak, he has opinions and he wants to go on a website. He has to consider the pros and the cons.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, you can be ridiculed or respected.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And in reality, I think you would be both, regardless
yes,
of whatever
yes,
you say.
Definitely.
You're always going to have someone's going to disagree with you.
Someone's going to disagree, and then someone's going to disagree and throw a tantrum. And then
yes,
someone's
oh my goodness, yes. That is a very, very common occurrence.
I am aware you're very familiar with it, Jafiri.
Oh my God. Incredibly so. Anyways, again... because you said you were a very political person.
Yes.
Speaking, and obviously your kazinakasar.com is mainly a political sphere.
Yes, but not necessarily only political, even social. So you know, I've for example written articles about things that aren't necessarily political. Like I wrote an article once about why people get jealous in relationships, which isn't political. That is something very social, but it is still. Kind of a controversial thing, because maybe someone who often gets jealous in relationships is going to read my article and think, wow, she doesn't know what she's saying at all, like this is ridiculous. And then there's someone else who's going to read this article and think, wow, like she's speaking facts.
Mm-hmm.
So even if I might make a post that isn't necessarily political, like for example, even like 2 weeks ago I had written one about Love Island.
Mm-hmm.
Love Island isn't necessarily political.
Capitalist fever dream.
Yes, capitalist fever dream. So someone can read that and not necessarily agree with it and might even get angry about it, but it need not necessarily be political for that to happen.
So what would you say, like for example, for the readers, the listeners, and non-readers of Kajira, what was, in a summary, how would you summarize that article, for example?
So the article that I had written about Love Island, first of all, I just like to make this clear, absolutely no hate to people who like watching Love Island. I must admit, I watched most of it, not all of it, but most of it, and I enjoyed it.
Most people did.
and absolutely no hate to the people who participated in it, because I don't believe that people who participate in society, people who participate in things that might maybe not be the best thing. I don't know if I'm wording this correctly, but people who just participate in society are not necessarily bad people or make bad decisions or whatever. They had an opportunity presented to them and they went for it, and maybe they enjoyed it, maybe they didn't. Completely their choice, no issue with that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I described in my blog post was the fact that, unfortunately, Love Island as a concept, as a show, as a form of entertainment is a bit harmful.
Okay, elaborate.
And the reason that I stated that it was harmful is because we are, unfortunately, at the end of the day, viewing footage. We're viewing we are viewing teenagers. Some of them were teenagers, 18, 19,
mm-hmm.
and young adults, 20, 21, 22. Mm-hmm. We are viewing them having emotional breakdowns.
Mm-hmm.
So the producers put them in a situation where they not only knew that they would have emotional breakdowns, but actually encouraged them to have emotional breakdowns. Mm-hmm. Because when they have an emotional breakdown, that is for entertaining.
If not you only have that, it's the emotional breakdown is the way they themselves keep themselves entertained. Because if there's no drama going on, you're just going to sit in a pool all day.
You have no show.
Yeah, exactly. No show. So the producers want them to cry. The producers want them to scream. Mm-hmm. The producers want them to...
And if they don't, they'll make it look like they cry.
Yes, exactly.
So they'll fake it.
Exactly. So my point is, we are viewing footage of people having emotional breakdowns. And sometimes the producers will say, oh, it's okay, because afterwards we'll offer them therapy. But in reality, the best way to prevent someone from going on a downward spiral is not to subject them to an emotional outburst and then offer therapy. The best way is to not subject them to the emotional outburst altogether. And also, you know, I go over in my blog post about how in recent years, over the past decade, there have been multiple suicides,
mm-hmm.
From both the host of Love Island, Caroline Flack, and two other contestants.
Mm-hmm.
There have been incidences where contestants have literally had breakdowns, which led to psychosis episodes. So they would have episodes of psychosis on the show and would have to be removed from the show due to, you know, these mental health reasons. So unfortunately, it is a bit of a ethical dilemma,
mm-hmm.
because why are we allowing these individuals to do this to themselves for money and fame?
But isn't viewing the product that they produce, it's kind of adding to the problem?
Yes, of course, and I'll admit it. I'll admit it. I'm saying this and I'm a hypocrite because I watch the show. but unfortunately,
it's like forbidden fruit. Like it's you know, it's horribly made, but damn, does it taste good, you know what I mean? So you keep on eating it.
Unfortunately, Love Island was so popular, especially like the Love Island Malta version, like in Malta, oh my god, it did wonders. Mm. It was such a success. It's so difficult to ignore. Personally, if it was not as popular as it was, I would not have bothered watching it at all.
Because I would say the only reason I watched it is because I knew a guy in it, because I wouldn't have.
I absolutely, like, I do not care for reality TV. I am not a reality TV girly.
The really interesting thing was how both the young generation, like
and the
our age,
generation.
And like my mom's generation or my dad's generation,
very different.
Both of them were so, like, the Maltese are into reality TV. I didn't expect them to be into this, but they still were.
The only reason I even watched Love Island was because my friends forced me into watching it, and I somehow got invested into the whole dynamic of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, can't you technically apply that to any sort of reality TV show?
Not only any reality TV show, but any TV show, I think, because in any production of any media, you're going to have unethical practices.
But in what sense?
So, for example, I might sit here and say watching Love Island is unethical because blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
I could also sit here and say watching iCarly is unethical because Dan Schneider, unfortunately, has been known to not be the greatest guy to work with, especially with children.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read Jeanette McCurdy's biography,
mm-hmm.
and I've read the kind of, I'm just going to say the abuse that she faced while watching iCarly. So mm-hmm. If I'm going to sit here and say don't watch Love Island, then you're going to have to say don't watch this reality TV show, don't watch that reality TV show, don't watch iCarly, don't watch Hannah Montana.
It's a double-edged sword.
It's very difficult to consume media ethically in general.
Yes, that's true. I mean, even Hollywood in general.
I mean, the writers strike recently.
Exactly. You could technically apply that logic to even sort of anything. Like, for example, it's not consumer, which consumer, it's not the right to own a phone, for example, because there were some workers in some third world country who built the phone.
Yes. Like, oh, yeah, I mean, you could, the cobalt that is in the battery that you need is mined in the Congo and children. There's a lot of facets.
So it's very difficult to draw a line. But your question was with regards to other reality TV shows. Yes, definitely. Especially things like Big Brother. Big Brother, they're quite notorious for bringing on people who they believe are a bit not mentally stable.
One certain male influencer was a brother, was a Big Brother contestant.
Oh yes,
he should be, he should be left.
Both of them, I think.
Both of the, yeah, was it both of them?
One of them. Who I think you're talking about.
Bald guy.
Oh my goodness, really?
Glass.
Yes, yeah. I had no idea.
He was a Big Brother contestant.
I had no idea.
What was it, 2009?
Oh, wow.
2009. He was a Big Brother contestant simply because of how much of a character and how egotistical the man was. And the producer, someone was like, man, we need to have this guy on the show. This guy will stir up so much trouble and so much drama. Perfectly encapsulated. Which, he got kicked off the show. Like midway, he got kicked off because of how bad things became because of him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think just reality TV show in general is quite
2016. I'm sorry, not 2009.
Wow, that was actually quite recent.
Yes,
quite recent.
I'm very surprised that I didn't know that. Thank you for teaching me something new. That's interesting. I'll go do a deep dive on it after we're done here.
His brother was on another TV show. There was some other TV.
I'm not sure. Not but really was, care on what TV show similar. He was on. I just know he was on a TV show, and in reality, one at that.
I believe it was like some sort of stranded survival type TV show.
No, it could have been Paw Patrol for us. I don't mind. But to spread the topic a bit further, where would you place yourself on the political scale? On a political, where would you place it? Like, for example, if listeners want to read Kajinakasar.com, what would they expect? Mm-hmm. What type of rhetoric would they expect from
Right, so first let me start off by saying I don't really believe that the political spectrum is a very good measure of placing people, kind of showcasing people's beliefs, unfortunately.
But it's a rough sketch.
A rough sketch.
I think the political spectrum is good to say I'm on this issue, I'm here, but on that issue, I'm there.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? But there's, you could say there's like a dominant side.
I completely understand your question. Just to answer your question, left. I'm very left. This isn't a secret. Anyone who knows me knows this. I'm very, very much on the left of most issues. The reason that I don't often go saying, oh, I'm here on the political spectrum is simply because it is, not only does it not showcase your full beliefs, but it's also very biased as a test. If you actually look at the statistics, I forgot the actual number, so don't take my word for it, but the great majority of people who take the test end up on the left, which does not reflect reality, because in reality it's not like, you know, everyone is on the left. Mm-hmm. But most people who take the test end up on the left, and that is because the questions are worded in such a way that if you choose anything other than the quote-unquote left option, you sound kind of like a monster. Like, I have this one question in mind, and this is me kind of defending the right here. I don't usually do this. Mm-hmm. But there is this
first
one...
First time exclusive.
There is this one particular question, which is like something along the lines of, do you believe that people should come before businesses? And obviously you're going to say yes, but people on the right don't necessarily, consciously at least, believe that businesses should come before people. They just believe that doing good for business does good for people, you know? So the questions are unfortunately worded in such a way that make the spectrum a bit skewed.
Objective.
Exactly. Mm. But yes, I understood your question, so it's like, yeah, on the left.
Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a good marker, huh? Mm-hmm. It's not accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you were to ask me, I have no idea what I would
ask. Yeah, neither do I.
Because... firstly, I've changed my mind on a lot of issues many, many times.
So, because again, it's a constantly changing paradigm. Yes, you know what I mean? Like it's completely
and especially
subjective.
Contentious issues. When it's contentious issues, that you can't not change your mind. If you don't change your mind, then okay. If you're just on a set of ideas and you stay rigid, then okay, you could kind of place yourself on the political spectrum because you won't move. And if you have different ideas about different issues, then you can say, okay, I'm left on this, I'm right on this, I'm center on this.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, Jake, I'm going to ask you a question now. How strange it is. Censorship, which is a very big, I wouldn't say a problem, but it's a very big is a big elephant in the room. So, do you think that some certain political views should be censored?
Oh, that's a rabbit hole.
Do you think they should be censored?
You see, historically, and I'm not going to speak as an expert, but I just have a history A level, right? Mm-hmm. Historically, I'm not a fan of the people who are doing the censoring. Mm-hmm. Issa, does that mean that I am happy to hear really, like, bad views? No. Mm-hmm. But in a society, how I would like it is that everybody has the right to say what they think. Mm-hmm. And everybody has the right to say, I'm not going to listen to what you think.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you could have ideas that maybe are fascist, for example, or racist or whatnot, I'd rather have them heard and then ridiculed and mocked. And bad speech is replaced by good speech rather than censoring. Because what you do when you censor is that you get people in favor of that because they're going to say, ah, you're censoring me, so he must be right.
Exactly.
And that's completely the other way around.
It's completely wrong. It's completely backwards.
It's when you say, let's say I believe, this is hypothetical, but let's say I think that Times of Malta is completely fake news, right?
Putting on the tinfoil hat again, Jim.
But then, if with that thinking, you're going to think that if Times of Malta is fake news, then everything they say is the opposite of the truth. So you're going to think that everything opposite of what they say is the truth. And that's completely wrong. Because, or it maybe you don't agree with their stance on something, but you have to admit when they're saying the truth.
Yes,
irrelevant of what your opinion of it is. So I'm not a fan of censorship.
I personally agree with you. I agree with you specifically on the sense that censoring harmful opinions, technically speaking, will actually give more power to the
yes,
to the opinion.
Exactly.
Then
the way you counter bad speech is good speech.
Exactly. That is how the basis of good rhetoric is based upon, not completely shutting the other side down.
Yes.
That's how I personally see it. So that's really
nice. Okay. So I think a very important question to ask here, and I'm asking you this, what do you consider censorship?
I consider censorship if it's a complete, total blockage of another opposing side's view. Even for example, if it needs to be, even if it's not harmful, if it's just censored for the sake, you don't agree with me, I think that is bad, pronto, full stop.
I mean, put it this way, okay. If you're on Facebook and you say, you post something and the post gets taken down, it's not legal censorship, right? Your right to free speech in the country is fine. And your post got taken down. Do you consider that censorship? I would personally, technically, yes, consider it censorship because, in a way, social media is the way you say what you think nowadays.
Exactly.
Back in the olden days, it would have been in the square having a pastitz, you know, saying what you think. Nowadays, it's on social media. And I believe it has the same effect. The only issue is that the whoever's doing the censorship has changed because it can be not just the government, it can be Facebook or whatever social media company you're using, you know?
But I agree with you to an extent on the social media point because, again, when you're signing up to a social media, you are signing up by their terms and their conditions.
Yes, yes, of course.
So
completely.
Their rules apply.
Completely, completely.
Completely.
But
so
that's
if you
I'm
get
saying
censored because you have violated their terms and conditions, then that is justified, in my opinion, because you signed up.
Yes, but there have been moments where the terms and conditions are vague and posts get censored when there's an argument they shouldn't be. That's the issue, when there's political motivations behind it. That's what I believe.
But how would you implement what you just said into an actual, like, real case
thing,
scenario?
The problem is that social media companies are global. So, for example, in America, you have the First Amendment. But in Malta, you don't. And now Facebook has its own jurisdiction. And Twitter has its own jurisdiction. So, for example, Twitter has recently become more liberal, I'd say, than
Twitter has become more
liberal. More liberal in the classical liberal. More libertarian.
Okay.
Than other social media companies. So they're following different terms of service. Then to regulate all social media to follow the same terms of service would be overreach.
I think one of the biggest issues with this debate is whether we consider entities like Facebook, Twitter, etc., whether we consider them private companies who can do whatever they want, or if we consider them public spaces, kind of, whether we consider them another form of press.
I agree.
That is
the biggest issue, because if we're considering Twitter a form of press, it is a lot harder to argue that censorship should be allowed than if it is a private entity, because technically if it is a private entity, then it is up to the people who are on Twitter.
You don't consider it a press, you consider it, so you have the four estates, which are, you know, the government, three, and the press. The argument is made that they make part of neither. They're the fifth estate,
mm-hmm.
social media. So if you think about it like that, I agree with you completely that it doesn't, you can't follow the same pattern of, because it's a private company,
mm-hmm.
I get to have whoever I want. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's political motivations everywhere, I mean, in every company.
So do you think it was wrong for Twitter to ban Donald Trump?
I think it was... I'm very mixed on the opinion of the banning of Donald Trump, in the sense, because all it ended up realistically doing, his views are still being heard,
mm-hmm.
just on a different platform, on his own platform. He has more power than he had.
Would you argue that he has more power?
Over his own social media platform now, I would argue yes. I would argue that yes, he does have more power on his own views and opinions, considering it's no longer being monitored by Twitter anymore.
What happens is when you censor someone as prominent as Trump is that you inevitably make him like a martyr, even though you haven't killed him, right?
But exactly.
He becomes a sort of martyr.
Not because I agree with Donald Trump or anything he says. I think he's the shallow idiot. Like, mm-hmm. I think the general consensus
mm-hmm,
is,
yes.
You know what I mean, but in the sense where you just exactly as how Jake put it, you made a martyr out of him.
I believe that the suspension was wrong specifically because the two tweets that they suspended him for, I believe that's a complete stretch of the terms of service. Just simply to remove a political opponent, in my opinion.
What is the tweets in question,
There's two tweets. One of them, quote, "The 75 million great American patriots who voted for me, America first and make America great again, will have a giant voice long into the future. They will not be disrespected or treated unfairly in any way, shape or form." Then another one was, quote, "To all of those who have asked, I will not be going to the inauguration on January 20th, quote. Those two tweets somehow broke terms of service. Now, I don't understand exactly what terms of service they have broken.
I can't personally speak for those two tweets because I haven't looked into it and I don't really know what terms of service they broke. You know, I'm not a Twitter terms of service expert. But what I can definitely say for certainty is the fact that I would argue that Donald Trump definitely incited violence when he kind of indirectly encouraged people on January 6th to storm the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, an incitation of violence, that is complete grounds for censorship.
I understand that, and I actually agree.
Mm-hmm.
However, the two tweets I just read, in my opinion, don't incite violence.
Yes, and in fact, I can't really talk about that because I don't know the exact reasons why those tweets were highlighted. But I know for something that we all know for a fact is that Donald Trump loves to use Twitter. He loved in the past
now
tense.
What's Truth
social?
Truth, sure.
Before Truth, he loves Twitter. He tweeted all the time. He tweeted very out-of-pocket things.
And he could be back on Twitter if he wanted to. He just doesn't because he hates Truth. He's like, I have to stick to it.
it'll be silly if now he just like... Now he needs to stick to his guns because he's like a massive idiot if he doesn't, right? Like, he just.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
He was in the Twitter shell, now he's back out and he's back in again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It would look bad for him. It would have been all those years. When was Trump banned again? What was this? 2020?
He was banned on January 9th, 2021.
He said there were the exact dates.
Yes. Because it's right in front of me.
He has it like a specific date. I know it somewhere.
No, but just to kind of answer the question that you had asked but a while ago, my idea about censorship is the fact that, yes, there should be free speech, but you can't expect there to be no consequences for the things that you say. So you cannot incite violence mm-hmm. directly or even indirectly, because there is a way to kind of indirectly incite violence. You cannot incite violence and then expect people not to have a reaction and expect the policymakers of whatever platform you're using to not have a reaction and expect law enforcement to not have a reaction to protect those who are putting in a vulnerable position.
Yeah, I think that the topic changes completely when you're talking about a random guy on Twitter and the president of the United States, which is fair enough. I mean, I understand that influence to a degree is what makes it more impactful. Because if you can influence the opinions of 50 million easy, I mean, you have to be careful with what you say. Mm-hmm. And if you're not careful, the consequences are justified in some cases.
And to bring the discussion kind of to a national scale, because we're talking internationally here, mm-hmm. to bring it to a Malta scale, one kind of example of censorship that has quote-unquote censorship, it depends if you consider it censorship or not, Matthew Grech, the guy from River of Love, the ex-gay black guy. So recently he has gotten into hot water because he said some things which law enforcement interpreted as the promotion of conversion therapy, and he had to pay a fine. Mm-hmm. He had to pay a very large fine. So I would argue that that is justifiable because he, first of all, he broke the law by promoting conversion therapy. In promoting conversion therapy, he has hurt people of the LGBT community. You know, I don't think it warrants any explanation. That is very hurtful to the LGBT community. It puts them in danger. Mm-hmm. So I would argue that that type of censorship is justifiable.
So to summarize what you're trying to say, or what you did say, is that censorship is okay as long, well, censorship is okay if it promotes some sort of hurtful or harmful agenda towards other people.
Exactly.
I mean, I agree about the incitement of violence, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think when it comes to harmful agendas, specifically when it deals with politics, mm-hmm. it depends, because it's the line between what is harmful genuinely and what is just a politically motivated takedown of someone is mm-hmm. different. In your case, I actually agree with the Matthew Grech one. I don't, because conversion therapy is...
Conversion therapy.
It's abuse.
It's literally more than...
So if you're advocating for that, you're advocating for abuse. To some degree, that's an incitement mm-hmm. of violence. Mm-hmm. That's how I view that censorship is justified, specifically when it comes to incitement of violence.
But do you think that censorship, at least nowadays, let's think about social media now. Mm-hmm. Do you agree that maybe there is a favorable political side?
A favorite political side.
Let's say on big social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook, for example. Like, would you agree that there is a sort of, like, do you believe there is political correctness, Katrina?
Would I believe there's political correctness where?
Politically, on social media.
Yes. On social media. Yes and no. I mean, the thing about social media is that what appears on your feed is what the algorithm deems is appropriate for you, mm-hmm. right? So if I interact with a lot of PC, pro-LGBT, pro-woman content, I'm going to get a lot of PC content on my, mm-hmm. on my feed. If I interact mm-hmm. with a lot of racist content, I'm going to get a lot of racist content on my feed. And mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that there isn't racist content on social media. There definitely
absolutely
is.
Not.
So your question of, is social media PC?
It's a question mark. Your question was if there is like a politically favored side.
Exactly.
I would argue that there definitely is. I mean,
on what platform would you say is favorable?
Like, for example, originally, before Elon Musk bought Twitter, I believe most social media was slightly left-leaning. Mm-hmm. Since Elon Musk bought Twitter, depends on how much you use Twitter. I happen to use it quite frequently.
I don't.
I believe the pendulum has swung a bit to the other side. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that, obviously, that doesn't happen on both sides, but I definitely would agree that the political right, even some people who won't even be claiming themselves to be politically right, have been mm-hmm. shadow banned, for example.
But the problem is, let's say I'm a right-wing commentator, right? It really depends what it is that I say that is getting taken down. Because if I'm a commentator on the political right, and I say something like, I believe in the free market, I believe that we should not let the government interfere with this and that, blah, blah, blah. Those are very right-wing takes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't believe those are the types of posts that are going to get taken down.
No, they're not.
But if I say, for example, oh, we need to stop letting in immigrants because blah, 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 and kind of I sink to a level where I'm starting to use racist rhetoric, yes, that might get taken down. Mm-hmm. But that isn't necessarily right-wing when I'm racist, that isn't necessarily a right-wing statement. That is a racist statement.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So it's not that I would argue that it isn't the right that is getting censored. I would just argue that it is more likely for a right-wing person, unfortunately, to say things that will get censored. But these aren't right-wing points of views that are getting censored, because I could be a leftist and be racist, you know.
Obviously, yes. I am of the belief that people on the right have sometimes been taken down unjustifiably so. And the reason being is because, as I said, I believe that most social media companies, except Twitter, as of recently, definitely had a left-leaning bias, in my opinion.
But then the question is, does it have a left-leaning bias, or is it just more likely that someone on the right is going to break the terms of service? Because that is a different thing.
But that's precisely my argument. I believe that the terms of service were gerrymandered and stretched to a degree so that you can excuse the taking down of someone who is right-wing or conservative. For most cases, not even. Because, for example, like the example of Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan has been cancelled many, many, many times. He himself is not even a right-wing person. He will tell you that. If you listen to any long-form podcast that he does, he's not a right-wing person. He has right-wing people on his show, but he also has left-wing people on his show, and he has extreme right-wing people on his show, and he has extreme left-wing people on his show. Mm-hmm. So if you go and censor the extreme right-wing, you better make sure you're going to censor the extreme left-wing, or either don't censor anything at all.
Exactly.
I mean, it's part of the reason why he's on Spotify. That's at least what he argues, is that Spotify promised him not to, you know, overreach as YouTube had done.
I haven't done much research on Joe Rogan, so I don't really know the situation.
I have.
So, question. Was he censored because of things he said or because of what people on his show said?
Some episodes, I remember, even Spotify actually had this happen. He had I don't know the number of the episode, but the guest was Majid Nawaz. And Majid Nawaz, he's an activist who is right-wing. He is, mm-hmm. he's a Muslim. He's self-processed right-wing. And the episode had been recorded and set to publish for weeks, and Spotify was not against Joe Rogan, but delaying the release of this episode for weeks and months, and Majid Nawaz himself said this is not from Joe's doing, this is Spotify's doing. And alright, the episode eventually got released, and there's not a part of it that's edited out and whatnot, but those things then kind of add to the fuel of those who want to see that it is censorship. Because if I have a preconceived notion that it is censorship and they're all censoring us, the moment you see a delay, you're going to be like, heh, they're right, oh, they are censoring. Even if that's not the case, according to Majid Nawaz, it was. And there's been also other episodes which have been taken down. I can't remember all of them by heart, but specifically, you know, Alex Jones, for example, has been censored by YouTube, I believe, many times.
And would you argue that Alex Jones being censored by YouTube was justified?
I would argue yes.
I would argue.
It depends.
It
depends, because I don't know what was the case specifically on YouTube. I just know he's not on it. That's all.
I also don't know specifically the case, but just thinking about Alex Jones's content in general, I can think of a number of reasons
exactly.
Why they
really
want him on
like,
the platform.
All you need is like look at a 5-minute compilation of Alex Jones, and you exactly know why he's being censored.
I understand.
I mean, they're poisoning the water to make the frogs gay. I mean,
that in itself is enough to explain why Alex Jones.
I mean, recently,
censored.
Have you been following American politics at all?
Not very intently. I know some stuff about Ron DeSantis. Other than
one of the leading Democratic nominees, RFK. Junior, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wow, surprising.
He has said that, spouted at least, or promoted what Alex Jones had said about the frogs making the water, and the chemicals in the water making the frogs gay. And everyone went berserk. Like, what are you talking about? But the fact that an idea like that has caught the mainstream, and not even on the Republican side, which you would expect.
Exactly.
But on the Democratic side.
But on the Democratic side. And in my mind, I believe that's actually a good thing, because imagine the political divide in America. Everyone is in an echo chamber. Everyone, mm-hmm. absolutely. But suddenly you have this guy on the left that's saying the things that the people on the right has been saying. And to my mind, that's good, because at least it encourages debate. Because if it's coming from someone you agree with, at least you might actually entertain some ideas.
You know what the problem is? The problem is that saying that they're poisoning the water to make the frogs gay isn't necessarily a right-wing take. It's just a stupid
it's just a
take.
Stupid take. Like, I don't know any right-wing politicians like the frogs. They're so gay, guys, and it's the water. I swear it is. I know. It's the bees. They tell me this.
that's the problem. Is that to me, like, you're referencing all of these situations in which people have been censored for saying certain things, and you're saying, oh look, they are censoring people on the right. But to me, they're not being censored because they're right wing takes. It's because they're either stupid or harmful. Unfortunately, they just happen to be coming out of the mouth of someone on the right. Which isn't necessarily the same as censoring right-wing takes.
So would you take stupid takes from? So let's say if there was a stupid take, like on the level of gay frogs on the left side, would you think that's also justifiably to be removed from and censored?
I mean, depending on what it is, yes.
I'm saying on the level of like gay frogs. You know what I mean?
I mean, look, if someone made a stupid tweet about gay frogs, I wouldn't necessarily. I wouldn't necessarily advocate to take it down just because it isn't necessarily harmful. I mean, obviously it is harmful if you're going to genuinely believe it, but the people are most of the time going to read it and think, haha, this is so stupid. But if someone on the left was genuinely inciting harmful ideas, yes, you know, people on the left can incite harmful ideas. It's just, to me, what is occurring is that it is unfortunately more of an issue with people who identify on the right of the political spectrum. And yes, unfortunately, I understand why people who are on the right might be a bit upset with this, because they feel like their name is being depleted by these idiots. Mm-hmm. And I understand that completely, but at the same time, what can you do? Mm-hmm. You know?
Interesting. Like, all this talk about politics is reminding me that social media is not just a political sphere. It's also a place where you can express yourself in multitude of ways, where it be comedy, for example. And that's another thing which I want to get into, is that what classifies as being brushing the line between offensive and comedy? Do you think that if a tweet is very obviously comedic, but it's very dark humor, for example, mm-hmm. would you think it is justifiable to be censored?
I would say no.
You would say no?
I say it just really depends. It's very difficult to make a broad statement, yes or no. I feel like this is very also contextual. It really depends on the context, and it depends on what is being said. That's why I will not like answer yes or no to that question,
well,
you know?
I want to give you the context for this.
Okay, sure.
So there was a recent article that Jake actually wrote about punching up versus...
I wrote
the rebuttal.
Oh, you wrote the rebuttal. Sorry, my bad. You wrote about it.
Yes.
And he wrote a rebuttal. So, for the listeners, what would you explain the article was about, and what was your rebuttal, Jake?
So, my article was basically about how comedians have a bit of a responsibility to be aware of the content that they spew. So, if I am a comedian, I feel like I have the responsibility to make sure that my jokes are appropriate. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, inappropriate jokes exist, but I feel like inappropriate jokes should be said in an appropriate manner, if that makes sense. So in an appropriate sphere. So if I'm going to be making a joke about a certain situation, ideally I do not make people who are less powerful than me for any reason, either because they are of a racial minority or because, I don't know, let's say I'm straight and the butt of the joke is gay people, I should be wary of that, mm-hmm. because I am doing damage, unfortunately, to the people who I'm making the butt of the joke. Mm-hmm. Now, this can be done in a good way, somehow. It's a bit difficult to explain, but basically, if I want to make a joke about a certain situation, ideally I should be punching up at the perpetrators. So if I'm making a joke about gay people, ideally I'm not actually making a joke about gay people. I'm making a joke about the stereotypes, the stupid stereotypes that plague the LGBT community, mm-hmm. which is why in my article I had referenced South Park, because I think that South Park does this really well. Mm-hmm. South Park has a lot of inappropriate humor, and I'm not in favor of censoring South Park, removing South Park, just because I feel like they do dark comedy, they do inappropriate comedy in a way that is not necessarily hurtful to mm-hmm. members of the LGBT community or members of the Asian community, Black community, etc., etc. Because when they attack these stereotypes. They are attacking the stereotypes. They're not attacking the people. And there's a very, very clear distinction between the two, if that makes sense.
That does make sense, but you brought the example of South Park, right? Mm-hmm. And listen, I'm a massive South Park fan. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, and without me writing how much I love South Park, right? Mm-hmm. So do you think that the creators, since the very beginning, had that in mind? Do you think it was the case? It's like, for example, I can think of a joke right now. It was an episode mm-hmm. where it was quite, even to me, I was like, okay, this is a bit too far. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was the episode about the accident-based Superman.
Mm-hmm. Savile, Henry, or was it another one? Henry Cavill?
No. The older one from the 70s.
Okay, I don't know. I have no idea.
Joe Savile.
Jimmy,
what are you talking about?
No, I'm talking about the actor that played Superman in the 70s.
Yeah, Christopher Reeve.
Christopher Reeves. Essentially, you know how Christopher Reeves is paralyzed.
Well, he died.
Well, he's dead now, but he was paralyzed for the majority of his life. And South Park made a joke about this. Mm-hmm. It was about, I don't know if I can say it on the radio or not, but it's something to do with fetuses.
Mm-hmm.
And
we'd rather not say it.
But in the sense, it was borderline really crude, but also very clever at the same time. Mm-hmm. So where do you draw the distinction? What would you say is the fine line between offensive and funny?
Well,
I guess it's delivery most of the time.
Yeah, delivery, exactly.
And it's genuinely
and
how
context.
It's written. Mm-hmm. But I think, because in my rebuttal, I believe, because I, if I'm not mistaken, you made 2 points mm-hmm. in the article, one of which was that jokes should be written in a manner
mm-hmm.
that either punches up mm-hmm. or punches well.
Or punches sideways.
Ideally doesn't punch down.
Yes, exactly.
Well, mm-hmm. So that, I believe, is predicated on the idea that punching up or punching down is based on the power
mm-hmm.
struggles, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I have my issue with it is that there's two implications being made. Is it that power is the main relationship by which to view jokes? In terms of, I say a joke about you, it's about the power relationship between me and you. I don't believe that's the case, because I don't believe you can see power in every sort of facet of life. Specifically, I don't believe the power is the main motivator between my friendship with you or my friendship with you or my relationship with my father or whatnot.
I would argue that power plays a very, very important role, though.
I'm
especially
I'm,
like when
does.
You mention you and your father. Your father has power over you, you know.
What's
financial like power when you were younger, physical power.
But I don't believe the actions he takes are a manifestation of that power. I believe the actions he takes are a manifestation of his love and care towards me and respect. Now, if you are to say that the main motivating factor is power, which I assume...
Well, rather than a main motivating factor, definitely a big motivating factor.
Right. I would argue that it's not smart, in the sense that if all that, most of my friendship with you is based on how much power I can exert over you, then I wouldn't even call that a friendship.
But we're not talking about friendship here. We're talking about a comedian.
Right,
we're talking
right.
About comedy.
Completely. But I wouldn't say that even when it comes to comedy. When I say a joke about someone, it isn't for me to exert power over them or to showcase my power over them.
In some situations, it can. And I can give a social example. Let's say there are a group of girls, and the girls are all friends. But unfortunately, this is just a hypothetical, I'm saying, by the way. Hypothetical is a group of girls. Now, there's one girl who's kind of like the queen bee. Mm-hmm. And then there's one girl who's a bit more insecure, you know, maybe a bit not as skinny as the rest. Maybe she isn't viewed as conventionally beautiful. But they're all friends, right? Except we have this kind of power dynamic of the queen bee and the not very queen bee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's have a hypothetical situation where they're out partying and some boys come over. And to impress the boys, the queen bee starts to make jokes about the insecure girl to seem cool and to put her down and to make her the butt of the joke.
Mm-hmm.
That is an example of how comedy can be used, where there is a clear power dynamic and someone is the butt of the joke and they are getting hurt.
Right, so the power dynamic there is based on essentially attraction.
Attraction, I mean popularity.
Right. What I also disagree with, which is the second point that you make, that the power struggle in comedy is based on race and or gender and or whatever else other demographic you want to use. Because I don't think that fixes the issue. Because if you are going to propose to protect a certain demographic, I believe you are elevating it above the rest. Quite frankly, you're going to create a two tiers, the one that is protected and the one that is not. And I believe using specifically race or gender or sex or religion or whatever it is, I believe it does more harm than good.
But I view it as a way of protecting groups that are already disadvantaged in society, because there's a difference between equality versus equity, right? Mm-hmm. Equality, you treat everyone exactly the same. Versus equity, you're taking into consideration the disadvantages that one group has, and you are adjusting your behavior to make sure that
Sorry to interrupt. The disadvantages are based on what? The skin color?
I mean, your skin color does give you a disadvantage in life. That is kind of, I think that is a bit of an indisputable fact that being Black, you're going to be subject to racism, you're going to be subject to, I mean, even they've done studies about this, if you apply to a job with a African-American sounding name, mm-hmm. you're less likely to get a call back.
Right, so should you have a quota? Them.
I mean, in my opinion, let's look past Malta, because this isn't very relevant to Malta. Let's say universities, right? We accept everyone as long as you have the right. correct A-levels. But let's say in America, that's not how it works.
Yeah, affirmative action. Yes,
yes, yes, yes. So they have affirmative action in America. In my opinion, that is justifiable. Because, unfortunately, due to things like generational wealth, due to things like, obviously segregation isn't really a thing anymore, but there are still segregated communities in America, and these segregated communities, unfortunately, Black communities, are less wealthy than white communities. They have less educational opportunities, more crime. So the people from these segregated communities do have a disadvantage when they are applying to universities.
Yes, but the issue is that you're still judging basically off of skin color.
We're not judging based off of skin color. We are making sure that the number of African Americans that they admit to their university is more representative of the general population. Because you can't have, I don't know how many Black people make up America, 13% or around
yes,
that mark, 13%. You cannot have a university where it's 95% white people when 95% is not the correct percentage of white people there are in America. That's actually more close to 80%.
But what if they did the tests and the people who passed the tests happened to fall into that category?
But why do you think that they are more likely to pass the test? Because I don't think it's...
I'm not saying
that this is what you are implying, but when you say, oh, they passed the test, therefore they should get in, you're kind of making the implication that they pass the test because they are smarter.
No, not at all. What I'm saying is that there is a benchmark,
mm-hmm.
and if the people who pass the benchmark should be included. What's happened with the affirmative action, essentially it was, but that you had lower benchmarks for some people and higher benchmarks for others. For example,
yes.
Asian Americans found it statistically harder to get into a university than white people.
Yes.
And African-Americans. And I feel like it doesn't make much sense because it's based off of skin color at the end of the day. If it was based, okay, if you have a thorough background check and you see that, okay, the family isn't well off, I understand that completely. So it would make more sense socioeconomically speaking, but I still see that the criteria is essentially skin color. And I believe that just is a complete reversal of what we're supposed to follow, which is judge people based off the content of their character, you know.
And I definitely agree with you that there will be certain instances where, say, for example, let's say I'm a Black kid and I just so happen to have been brought up in a wealthy family, mm-hmm. right? So in a way, this affirmative action is going to unfairly advantage me.
Yes.
But I feel like you're looking at these specific circumstances where it might be unfair, and you're disregarding the fact that as a whole, the practice has been beneficial because it has brought more people from African American communities into these really good universities.
I actually would argue it's counterproductive, because if you enter a university and you're not qualified, but you entered because of not a quota.
And these people wouldn't be unqualified.
Yes, but then
they would just get in instead of people who would technically be qualified, but they were brought in because of affirmative action, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but if you're replacing people who were technically more qualified than you, based off of skin color,
yes, isn't that more qualified, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they weren't qualified too.
I'm not saying that. For example, as I said, the Asian American community.
To stop you guys for a bit, for a second, I just find it very ironic how we actually talked about talking about affirmative action on the show, but we thought it wouldn't be relevant enough, and now we've been talking for the past 20 minutes about affirmative action.
I've
been just sitting here being so entertained by you two debating. It was so fun.
Affirmative action got shut down in the Supreme Court. It's no longer, well, it's up to the universities now, but it was ruled unconstitutional.
I'm not very much of an expert on, you know, the
RFK
constitution.
RFK is actually in favor of it.
Just to say, is there any, can you agree to disagree?
Yes, of course.
Exactly.
In the benefit of democracy and free
and
speech.
And in the benefit of the fact that we have 2 minutes left.
Exactly. That's exactly why we don't have plenty much time, guys. So either way, so thank you very much for listening to the second episode of Il Oso. It was very nice having you, Katrina Kasar.
Thank you very much, Andre. Thank you for inviting me.
Go follow her blog. Can you plug it in again?
KatrinaKasar.com.
Exactly. So please do it.
It's my name.
It's her name, guys.
Yes, one would expect that.
Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your day, evening, night, whenever you're really watching this, and see you in the next episode.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
في العزر